Prepare yourself, it's Big News Wednesday. Welcome one and all. I was seeing all of these comments, like from Rosalba that says, I've missed JR and his passionate takes. And I thought, you know what? I'm gonna go get him. And thankfully he was very close. It didn't take much of a walk. And so here he is, JR Jackson.
What's going on, brother? I feel like it's been a week and a half since I've seen you guys.
It does feel like a long time.
Just because it was, John.
We'd switched out the, yeah, you did the, shut up. Anyway, I'm very excited to have you here to get your takes. We were talking before the show about something that I can't talk explicitly about, but I think for some of you, it would be an incredibly exciting development coming up in not too long, more news to come. So stay tuned. If you're a fan of JR, you'll be a fan of some of these developments. That's what I will say. Anyway. Yeah.
Well, my first take is they should have never broken up Liv and Raquel. This is going down the wrong direction.
You can't do that. Look, do I want to start off the show talking about the WWE? Yes, every day. We can't do it. We can't do it. But anyway, I will say I'm gonna potentially be doing some videos for Snapchat that are non-political, and immediately that's what I thought of. So if you're interested in my takes on the WWE, go to the Snapchat or maybe my personal TikTok or something. I'm not gonna do that to you on damage.
Wait to see what Freddie Prinze said about it, since he used to be a writer for WWE.
He did, and
outstanding.
I listened to Freddie Prinze's Wrestling with Freddie podcast. It is on the network that my wife produces for, actually, Michael Tora on iHeartRadio. Anyway, in other news as well, we do content for TikTok, tiktok.com/@thedamageReport, just search for the damage report. I think I'm gonna do my first live TikTok. And I'm gonna do one of two things. I'm either gonna talk about a couple of different stories that producer Ashley prepared for me, or I might just respond to stickers and say things like ice cream so good. I don't know, it just depends on the vibe, I guess. I'm gonna follow the vibe. So that'll be coming up after today's program. Anyway, we do have a lot of politics to talk about today, including Ron DeSantis really trying to pivot in his presidential run. We'll see how that goes for him. Joe Biden having a lot of fun with a new ad, and a legal development for Donald Trump that is scorching hot. Like, I can't, I just love reading quotes sometimes. And there are some quotes from this judge that I cannot wait to read for you. So stay tuned. About halfway through the show, it's gonna be very excited. So anyway, lots more to come. Oh, also, we are finally gonna be joined once again by David K. Johnston in the aftermath. He's going to be responding to the targeting letter that the special counsel sent to Donald Trump, giving us his take as an investigative journalist who's covered Trump for literally decades. How serious is this? That'll be coming up in the aftermath. And along the way, by the way, please hit the like button, share the stream, send us comments, we'll respond as we go. Well, that said, JR, you ready to start the show?
Oh yeah, let's do it, come on.
Okay, let's do it. We're gonna start by breaking down some of Ron DeSantis's interview with Jake Tapper. So prepare yourself, it starts with this.
Some of your supporters are disappointed that your campaign has yet to catch fire the way they would want in terms of polling. One Republican pollster, one who is sympathetic to you, I was asking her about your campaign, and she said she thought the issue was you bumped up at the beginning because voters, Republican voters, saw you as a more electable conservative like Trump, like you, Trump without the baggage. But then they say as you go further and further to the right on some of these divisive social issues that could alienate moderates, suburban moms, etc., Republican voters see you as less and less electable. What do you say to that analysis?
Well, I don't think that's true. I mean, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, I took a state that had been a 1-point state, and we won it by 20 percentage points, 1.5 million votes. Our bread and butter were people like suburban moms.
Yeah, that might be true. It might be that there are some hyper conservative suburban moms in Florida that liked his stuff. But what he can't deny is what he focused on in that race was that extreme social cultural stuff that Jake Tapper's talking about. And look, he can say, I don't think it's true that that will make me less electable in the general election were I to become the Republican nominee. I think he's wrong, but he can claim that. What he can't claim is that this is clearly what Republican voters think. He has gone super hard into the exact same sort of culture war stuff, choosing a marginalized group and then trying to obliterate it that he did in Florida, and it isn't helping him. And look, he can say whatever he wants, but do you know where he's saying it? He's saying it on CNN with Jake Tapper. He never did any of these interviews before. He was always just on right-wing news. He clearly is changing up his strategy because his strategy isn't working. That's how that actually goes, and I think he's demonstrating it. JR, what do you think?
Well, it's only like part of the strategy. That's the other thing though, right? So he's saying the same things he was saying, still pushing these culture war issues when oddly, you know, all the things that they say they were gonna campaign on, actual bread and butter issues that Americans care about and are struggling with. They had tapped into some of those. The problem was that they had no intention of ever changing or doing anything about those things. So now they have to abandon it and go back to normal campaign rhetoric, which is back to the culture war stuff. But the half of the changing it was not changing that messaging, only changing where he's saying it. So you go to CNN and act like you haven't been saying this when that's been the drumbeat of your entire existence as a national figure, is being this guy who's pushing the same things Trump has. Again, he's trying to find some kind of difference between him and Trump. And I think he found something with claiming that Trump is all about the LGBTQ plus community, right?
Yeah.
That didn't fly because everyone knows how much a BS that is. And in fact, it made him look even worse. So he's finding himself cornered because he's cornered himself. You're this guy. It's a typecast thing. He's like a child actor who had the one hook line and never could escape that role again because that's all he ever said. So now that you're 25 years old and you're trying to be a serious actor, all anybody ever sees is your old hook line of, I hate everybody. So if that's your hook line, bro, you can't get away from it anymore. Ron DeSantis, child actor, hook line, I hate everybody. Yeah. That's just what it is.
No, like an incredibly homophobic ad comes out. Did I do that? Yeah, you're side.
What you talking about, Ron?
By the way, I kind of avoided commenting on it because I just wanted to see what people thought. But if you were Ron DeSantis, don't use the expression "the proof is in the pudding." Can I just, does that need to be said of all of the idioms? And I get it, I love idioms. I've actually often thought about launching a podcast that just dives into the origins of idioms because I find them that fascinating. But if you're Ron DeSantis, keep your fingers out of that particular idiom would be my advice. Anyway, he is in a tough spot. I think that we all understand that. He wants to go super hard right, culture war, all of that, because he probably rightly thinks that's the only chance that he has. But when he does that, people bump up against it. So what is he supposed to do? I mean, at the very least, he's supposed to try to take down Trump. Well, Trump's facing a lot of bad news. So what is his response to that gonna be like? Take a look.
I hope he doesn't get charged. I don't think it'll be good for the country. But at the same time, I've got to focus on looking forward, and that's what we're going to do.
Jack Smith has prosecuted Democrats, too. I mean, he prosecuted, or at least was part of the prosecution of Senator Menendez, Senator John Edwards. Are you saying that if he finds evidence of criminality, he should not charge Donald Trump anyway?
What I'm saying is, when you're going after somebody on the other side of the political spectrum, if you're stretching statutes to try to criminalize maybe political disagreements, that is wrong. Now, look, this is all speculation, but I think we've gone down the road in this country of trying to criminalize differences in politics.
Okay, so I'm gonna leave aside all of the different rights that he's stripped away in Florida and that he would strip away at the national level that is definitely criminalizing political differences. We'll forget that for right now. So the fact that this guy, Jack Smith, has been involved in prosecuting Democrats, credit to Jake Tapper for bringing that up. I think that's an interesting bit of history that will be utterly irrelevant to Ron DeSantis because he doesn't care about the facts. None of them do. The fact that he does care about, I guess, is he needs to be defensive towards Trump. He needs to simultaneously take down a guy who will attack him more viciously than we've ever seen before. And at the same time, he can't really criticize him because then all the people that he's trying to get a vote for him will hate him until the end of his days. And so the guy clearly committed these crimes, but you have to pretend that he didn't. You have to imply that statutes are being stretched when, I understand that the upcoming indictments are about something else, but the most cut and dried part of all of this is he stole the documents. He had them down there. They tried to get them back. He refused to give them back. There's no stretching of any statutes there. He obviously did the crime. The only question is, will there be any time? And so this sort of like defensive response, he tries to pivot to, you know, the Democrats are weaponizing the DOJ. Okay, I think that you think that that's helpful to your campaign, but that's Trump's thing. You're really just strengthening the sort of narratives that he's gonna use to get elected.
He can't get away from, he cannot get away from Daddy Trump. It's who he's posed himself to be the little version of, except he thought Trump maybe would hopefully win two terms, then he can get rid of him and step in. Then that whole wrench was thrown into the works. Now he's got to find a way to find these differences. It's just not really working out. But then everything you say to still try to appeal to MAGA is going to help only the head of MAGA. He's still there. They're caught in this trap. Because you see Nikki Haley starting to switch a little bit. Chris Christie from the beginning to his credit has been coming in with a flamethrower. Because Nikki Haley's starting to see, I have nowhere else to go here. Everyone else is just kind of being quiet or continuing the same route that Ron DeSantis is here. But then again, he says, I hope he doesn't get charged. I hope he doesn't get charged. From the Law and Order Party, I hope someone who potentially has all this evidence against him doesn't get charged. Based off of what, Ron? Anybody can ask this next question. Why don't you want him to get charged? And he did mention, at least in a way, is we're going to have this politicization of our justice system. We're going to have one side that's constantly trying to jail the other side. I did this in a video yesterday. What side is always trying to get the other one jailed? Who started the lock him, lock her, lock it up, lock anybody up chance? It's Republicans and MAGA. So you can't now have this flip where he said, yo, I can't believe that we have politicians that are trying to jail their political opponents. Bro, yeah, that's your side.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% right. They aren't even pursuing people that I think that a very credible case could be made that they have broken the law. Like Marjorie Greene was stalking people. She has actually encouraged political violence. They've never pursued anything against her in a legal way or whatever. Lauren Boebert, I know everybody seems to have forgotten this. There are like massive concerns about how she spent her campaign dollars. Like she billed travel that would have taken her, I think it was like 40 times around the earth just in driving around her district. Like there are concerns. If we wanted to just hunt down people and get them for all of the legitimate crimes, let alone ones that we invent, we could do that. That's not what's happening. Donald Trump is being pursued for a lot of things. I will grant you that. Do you think that that's actually the extent of the things that you could be investigating him for if you wanted to? I mean, like I'll just pluck one random one. Remember when there was the thing that AOC, I think, really provided a lot of illumination on with a witness testimony having to do with insurance fraud on Mar-a-Lago, like damage that had been done during a hurricane that didn't actually happen? Does anybody remember that? Nothing's ever been done about that.
I don't know at all. I totally don't remember that.
It's all BS. But anyway, thankfully, this particular BS isn't helping him. It might help Trump, but it's not helping DeSantis. Now that said, we want to turn to sort of the focus, DeSantis' campaign. Take a look at this.
About this sweeping new military policy you proposed that in your words will rip the woke out of the military. The Pentagon response is that Army and Marines readiness is the best it's been in years. And reenlistment in the Army is the best it's been in years. So their argument might be in response, what problem are you trying to solve?
Well, why do we have the worst recruiting that we've had since the Vietnam conflict? Why have great warriors being driven off, such as with the COVID-19 shot mandates? These were people that had been performing admirably. A lot of them had COVID, they had natural immunity. They were told take this shot or leave. So I think you've had a big problem with morale. You clearly have a problem with recruiting. And at this levels, everybody has acknowledged these recruiting levels are at a crisis. Why is that the case? I think it's because people see the military losing its way, not focusing on the mission and focusing on a lot of these other things.
Okay, so there's a lot of different subtle differences in the flavors of BS in what he just said. So he was asked, like, you've said that you're doing all of this to make sure that the military is at the level where it needs to be readiness wise. They're saying that they are. So why are you still pushing for this? And he says, well, some people were pushed out over COVID. Okay, a couple of years ago, sure. The fact he then threw out, they got COVID, they have natural immunity. I just want to be very clear. He just had that interview, I believe yesterday, at least in the last couple of days. He's still pretending that if you had COVID, you have natural immunity to it. Who the hell thinks that? What even anti-vaxxer believes that you can't get COVID multiple times? Anyway, look, the thing about this is that it's very clear, and that I think Jake Tapper understands, but he can only go so far because it's CNN. They're not supposed to be really adversarial, is this is not a problem that needs to be solved. It is a thing that needs to be focused on. That's it. And you will say crazy things if that's all that's driving you is a need to talk about something. The idea that not enough people are signing up for the military because the military isn't focused on the mission. Yeah, lots of people were like, you know, I really want to give my life to the military, but like there's gay people. Who the hell thinks that? I'm being completely honest. He was in the military. He seems to have no idea why anyone signs up for the military. It is incredibly simple. People sign up for the military for the money. That's why. Talk to military recruiters. They sign up for the military. That's why military recruiters prey on people who don't have a lot of money. There's a tiny 1-2% of people who are well off who sign up for the military so that they can someday burnish their credentials for a run for Congress or something. Ron DeSantis would be a great example of that. But other than that, it's people who want the money. They don't care about gender affirming care or surgeries, whether the military has diverse language. That's not, now look, you get rid of all that stuff and you might drive out some people who do prioritize that stuff. But the vast majority are signing up for the economic opportunities that are inherent in it. If you want to juice the numbers, increase that. Give people more of a financial incentive to sign up. Maybe don't make them think that they're going to be thrown into, you know, the grinder in Afghanistan or Iraq or something. There's still, I think, a lot of fear that's come out of that. But this is a guy who's in the military who seems to understand literally nothing about why people sign up for it, JR.
There's a problem the Republican Party has. They've always worked in this realm of just saying something and they're not expecting anyone to actually know the real answer. And they're still there, but there's way too much information available now. So Ron DeSantis can say, you know, and we have these military recruitment numbers. And if you see the wording of what he said, he goes, and I think it's because of this, 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 that, and the third. Who cares what the hell you think, bro? That's not reality. I think a lot of stuff. I just think about it. Doesn't mean that it's suddenly reality. So he thinks it's because of woke, because of the DEI, it's because we're allowing different folks that he thinks are weird to be in the military. Nothing based off of what anyone has said, because there's this weird thing. It's called information. You can check and ask people who are trying to recruit more people into the military and they'll tell you. Because they said the military service said that biggest hurdles right now are more traditional ones, which means people don't want to die or get injured. They don't want to deal with the stress of army life and to put their lives on hold. They have other avenues to find a career path. Again, that's why many people that were kept down in low socioeconomic standards, they find themselves, well, my only recourse left is go to the military. I've got family, I've got friends. When I grew up in St. Louis, that a few did it that for that very reason. They didn't say, I've got this scholarship to University of Miami. I got this scholarship to go across the country and go to school wherever I want. They go, I've got nothing else to do and I'm not sure where my life is going next. I guess I'll go to the military. That's what many recruitment is. But people now have other options. And this other thing, they're noticing what happens to many veterans after they come out of the military and they've got family and friends that they experience this with. Mental health, PTSD, physical damage, and the way that the many times our military doesn't, our government doesn't take care of those veterans. Who wants to do that now? There's way too much information now and then people are starting to be turned off by it, but they'll just say it's something else. That's not gonna get anything changed.
Yeah, and as you say, you could find out all of this by actually talking to people. To put it in terms that Ron DeSantis might understand, the proof is in the pudding, I guess. Anyway, let's stay on the concept of woke. We've had a few instances of what you're about to see happening with other people. I love that it's finally happening with Ron DeSantis. Check this out.
I surveyed people, I think 16 to 28 barriers to service and beyond the ones such as don't want to die, don't want to be injured, don't want to be away from my family. The biggest issues were the number two issue, women and racial or ethnic minorities are discriminated against in the Army. Wokeness is listed here, but it's only number nine. So that would suggest that wokeness is not as big.
Well, but I think there's an issue about, like, not everyone really knows what wokeness is. I mean, I've defined it, but a lot of people who rail against wokeness can't even define it. And so I think it's a sense of, you know, this is not something that's holding true to the core martial values that make the military unique.
I love that. I love that Jake Tapper read it and then said, you want to take a look at this? He didn't have to do that. That was Jake Tapper having fun. And so I love that. I'm not, you know, necessarily a huge fan of Jake Tapper, but I love him needling it with that. And then Ron DeSantis, of course, has to reply to it. His answer does not do at all what he thinks it does. So it's devastating to him that even something like wokeness is ninth. That's so bad. Literally, it is many times after legitimate concerns that if you have those concerns, he'd call you woke. That is a much bigger concern, like fears over discrimination against women, the rampant sexual assault crisis in the military, discrimination against racial minorities. Woke concerns are way more common as an explanation for why people aren't enlisting than wokeness in the military. And then he says, well, okay, so you can't count that because most people don't know what wokeness. I mean, I know what it is. I've defined it. Don't ask for citations, but I've defined it. But other people can't. But that doesn't prove what he means. The very idea that wokeness means whatever you think it means it's much easier for you to just throw it out as a problem, and it should rank much higher as a result. Even as vague as it is, where you can define it however you want, it's only number 9. So that is just damning to him. It's damning to the entire anti-woke thing. Wokeness can be defined. It's just, I don't like that. Stop it. Don't call me racist. Don't call me. That's all it is. It's that knee-jerk feeling. It's the feeling that some people care and you don't want to have to. That's what it is. But even that doesn't rank that high, Jer.
It's pro-discrimination is what people who like to rail against what they call woke is. By the way, this is the same traditional flip of the script that many conservatives are now trying to push. He said, yo, all these people who rail against me talking about woke, they can't even define it. Why the hell would they have to define it? This is the beef you've got. You've got this beef. People are trying to live and have, you know what they call it? They call it diversity. They call it inclusion. You know, those types of things that you hate on. That's what we're calling the things that you don't like. So I think it's your opportunity and then your responsibility to talk about what it is you hate so much. So you rail about things that you hate and you want the people that you hate to define what it is that you hate? Bro, how about you take a little bit of responsibility for the arguments that you continue to make? And by the way, they can't define it. Bro, it's so tiring. All this is continuing to illustrate is just how little prepared Ron DeSantis is for this entire run.
Yeah.
You didn't have an answer for that yet. You didn't have a preparation and approach to talk about military recruitment and not have the same thing you said over and over and over again that still isn't working. Bro, where are the consultants? Where are the advisors? Is he working on this by himself?
No, apparently he's got the biggest staff of all of the people running right now. He's burning through like $8 million a month. He doesn't seem like he's bringing the best people onto his campaign.
Bro, I'm gonna join the campaign. He can't win anyway. Just pay me some cash. I'll give you some good advice. You still suck, but I'll try.
Okay, we got one more clip that we gotta play. It's just too important, and it's gonna be really important during this race. We have to be a little bit quick in our response to it, but let's jump right into this.
As a nationwide ban.
So I said I'm pro-life, I will be a pro-life president, and we will support pro-life policies. At the same time, I look at what's going on in the Congress, and you know, I don't see them making very much headway. I think the danger from Congress is if we lose the election, they're gonna try to nationalize abortion up until the moment of birth. And in some liberal states, you actually have post-birth abortions.
Okay, that is wildly insulting to everyone listening to that. And that I'll include the conservatives. They may not care that they're being insulted by Ron DeSantis there because they like the idea that the lie that he's telling them might be true. The idea that in some states there is post-birth abortion. It's too bad that we cut off the video. Why'd you guys cut it? He was gonna list the states after that. The multiple states in the United States right now that, 3 months, 6 months later, you just kill the baby. That's a thing that actually happens. They say that all the time, and then they just run out of time to list which the states are. So every single time that a Republican like Ron DeSantis says, we need to stop the Democrats because they're gonna make abortion legal at or after birth, what they're admitting is we cannot hope. We have not even one hope in hell to convince people of our position when we engage in a debate in the realm of reality. In what the bounds of the debate that people are actually discussing, the weak limits that exist in places like California or other blue states, they cannot actually hope to win people over. And I understand their fear in engaging this debate. As I always say, they tried for more than half a century and they failed. They continue to fail. They've lost races because they've failed to win people over. And so if nobody likes your position, I guess we just make up a crazier one for the other side and pretend that they have it. The issue is that you need to win over independents who don't like you on this issue, and they know that what you're saying is BS. He's at least, I guess, to his credit, being a little bit more clear that if it's up to him, they will federally outlaw this. That's more honest than most of these Republicans who would definitely sign a bill if it were given to them by the Republicans in the House and in the Senate to outlaw abortion nationally. He's openly admitting that he'll do it, and he's also in his rhetoric admitting that he knows that people hate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Really fast, because this is the thing, to lie wildly like this is something that I think Ron is still trying to get a grasp of. Donald Trump has that immunity. He's captured the brains of MAGA to this degree that he can blatantly say something. He could say the exact same lie and more people would believe Trump than they would DeSantis. DeSantis hasn't gained, he hasn't paid the cost yet to get to that point yet. So those lies, people go, really? Somehow when Trump does it, it's a little more of, oh yeah, of course, yeah. He's got their brains already melted into his hands, so it's already over. But it's obvious that if they actually gave a damn about anything that had to do with women's health, and also, by the way, babies potentially being aborted, maybe from younger women and girls who find themselves in that situation, you'd find solutions to preventing it. They also have a problem with prevention of things that they want to get away from. They want to continue to see it so they can rail about it later, or else they have no stance whatsoever.
Yeah, JFMEHL has a great question. So obviously, Ron DeSantis didn't list the states. Did Jake Tapper ask him?
100%.
Like, I kind of feel like that demands a follow up. Yep. Like, I understand that you already did the thing with the paper or whatever, and that was fun, but like, this claim comes out pretty often. I feel like you should be ready for it. Anyway, with that said, we do need to take our first break. When we come back, Biden having maybe too much fun on social media with his ad featuring Marjorie Greene, that and more after this. With that said, if you're just joining us now, hit the like button. We're gonna have some fun starting with this.
Joe Biden had the largest public investment in social infrastructure and environmental programs that is actually finishing what FDR started, that LBJ expanded on, and Joe Biden is attempting to complete programs to address education, medical care, urban problems, rural poverty, transportation, Medicare, Medicaid, labor unions, and he still is working on it.
Look, people say that there's no bipartisanship anymore, and I love to see people on both sides of the aisle working together. That was really nice of Marjorie Greene to give Joe Biden so much credit for the great work that he's doing in all of these areas. God damn, is she a doink? She is a dumb, dumb donkey, and she's doing work for the donkeys in this case, actually. So that was put out by the Biden Twitter account with "I approve this message." My only note, JR, would be it should have ended with Joe Biden on camera with the biggest grin in his life saying, "I approve this message." That's what it needed. I love the corporate music. I love the stock footage and everything. Man, is she an idiot.
They gotta say the similar things also, like you know, if Joe Biden's face comes up there, you'd be like, as promised, unity, bipartisanship. Just all the things that we always said that people are craving, which somehow we stopped talking about suddenly. Because remember, Republicans talking about unity when Donald Trump was running around. Whatever. But no, in this particular case, it's one of those things. Similarly, I think I've heard Marsha Blackburn, others talk about the border policy. And this is the one they always hit. They're like, did you get that several tons of fentanyl was confiscated at the border between March and June of 2022? This administration is failing the American people. It's like, bro, they confiscated tons of fentanyl at the border. What do you want? What's the alternative? To not confiscate the tons of fentanyl at the border and then there's a failure? Which one is the failure? It doesn't matter. That's the point. They've got these people's minds melted long enough that they're like, anything we say, as positive as that sounded, and we saw the edits and inserts. And the one thing I do want to check back in is the process in which he went through all of those points, because I wonder where maybe some potential manipulation happened. We know that happens in political ads, but she still said all those things. And they say these regularly, even with education. So the things that they hate, they keep telling American people that. Just start listening, you guys. The things they hate are the things that would actually help your life. Yes, Republicans, conservatives as well. It's 100% it, but they're blaming Democrats for it as they screw up your lives. Just if you get that one point, you just might have a better chance.
Yeah, they're literally just listing, he wants to help rural people. and saying, well, obviously that's a bad thing. You do the math for yourself why that's bad. No, not for rational people with working brains. That's not how it actually works. This is just an auditory version of what Hannity used to do, where he just put like they want to do elder care and stuff in like a list of policies. And I don't have Fox brain, so I don't understand why that's a bad thing. But anyway, look, this puts Marjorie Greene in a bad position. I think that she knew she was in a bad position immediately after the media response to her original statements. And then the ad comes out. She is going to find a way to make it slightly worse for herself. But first, here is this press secretary, Karine Jean-Pierre, says, we agree with Marjorie Taylor Greene, which is not something that we say very often. We agree with her all around on this. We are opposed to rural poverty. And the president is committed to protect Medicare and committed to protect Social Security. She's giving him honestly too much credit, but
yeah, actually,
she doesn't think that he's being fair. She is concerned about the same thing that JR was saying, that this is a manipulation. And so she responded directly to that tweet saying, this is really what Joe Biden approves. It is just the longer version of her comments in which she gives him credit for more, makes some really tenuous connections in history to LBJ, and then says that what she's describing is socialism. I will say, feel free to go watch the video if you want. I feel like I can be totally honest and save you time in saying it is just what you saw, and she calls it socialism. And I would honestly say the fact that Joe Biden, if he cut anything out, is the calling him socialist, at least is being honest, because he's not and he doesn't support socialism. Anyway, dumb, dumb donkey. Okay, with that said, we need to move to far more important news. So let's jump into this. Donald Trump has had a lot of bad legal news this week, but this is maybe low key one of the worst bits, or at least the most scorching. So this has to do with E. Jean Carroll. Now, obviously, E. Jean Carroll won this defamation lawsuit, one of several that's pending against Donald Trump for what she alleges was his sexual assault of her many years ago in the Bergdorf Goodman's. So Donald Trump wants to end the additional potential charges that he got to pay the additional fees, and there's still more iterations of this to come. So he tried to shut it down and he was stopped. But that isn't the worst part of this. So I want to give you some of what US District Judge Lewis Kaplan said. This came down just earlier today. So the headline version of it is that Lewis Kaplan rejected Trump's demand for a new trial that would have voided the millions in damages. Okay, Kaplan says that the jury's initial decision was not a quote seriously erroneous result, nor a miscarriage of justice. And that is bad for Trump because he doesn't want to have to pay $5 million. But it's what the judge says in the ruling that I think is most damning. So I'm going to read you a few little sections of it. And this is amazing. The jury's unanimous verdict in Carroll 2 was almost entirely in favor of Ms. Carroll. This is the judge. The only point on which Ms. Carroll did not prevail was whether she had proved that Mr. Trump had, quote, raped her within the narrow technical meaning of a particular section of the New York penal law. The finding that Ms. Carroll failed to prove that she was, quote, raped within the meaning of the New York penal law does not mean that she failed to prove that Mr. Trump raped her, as many people commonly understand the word rape. Indeed, as the evidence at trial recounted below makes clear, the jury found that Mr. Trump, in fact, did exactly that. I'm going to give you a little bit more, but that is the judge saying they did, in fact, prove, based on the way that everyone uses the term, that he raped her. It is not exactly how it is defined in the New York Penal Code, but for common usage, that's irrelevant because nobody defines words the way that the New York Penal Code does. And this is important, like culturally, because Donald Trump and his supporters coming out of the E. Jean Carroll verdict have like crowed that, hey, they didn't say that he raped her. Forget all the stuff about sexual abuse and all that. They didn't say that he raped her. The judge is saying, no, they in fact did do that. I'm gonna give you one more section. So why does this matter? Again, this is the judge. So why does this matter? It matters because Mr. Trump now contends that the jury's $2 million compensatory damages award for Ms. Carroll's sexual assault claim was excessive because the jury concluded that he had not raped Ms. Carroll. Its verdict, he says, could have been based upon no more than groping of Ms. Carroll's breasts through clothing or similar conduct, which is a far cry from rape. And while Mr. Trump is right that a $2 million award for such groping alone could well be regarded as excessive, that undermines rather than supports his argument. His argument is entirely unpersuasive. And if it's not immediately clear what the judge means there, is the jury cannot, under the New York Penal Code definition of rape, say that he raped her. And yet they awarded an amount of damages that's not consistent with what they were definitionally able to prove, which implies not that he didn't rape her, but that they still believe that he did. And so they fined him as if he did, even though they cannot, under the strict definition of the New York Penal Code, prove it. So that, again, as Judge Kaplan says, does not prove his point. It utterly undermines it because they are acting in every way that they legally can as if they believe what most people coming out of this believe, which is that he raped E. Jean Carroll.
It's all
sorry, the JR, process. That gets into the weeds, but what do you think?
Absolutely, because it's necessary, because this is why these types of back and forth and legalese always go through this way and people come out wondering, wait, what happened again? Because we don't get to these types of details. But no, imagine that you're a supporter of this guy and then part of this whole thing is you're scraping for the bottom of the barrel to be like, yo, listen, no, he didn't actually rape. He actually did a bunch of other things that were very close to rape, therefore I support him. What? Why is that now that's your bottom of the barrel standard? That's what you're standing on as the whole basis for your support of the guy that after this $2 million came forward again? How much of that $2 million is your cash? Why do you care this much? I mean, I see why his attorneys may make those cases, but then they don't want the normal layman thought process people in the world to be looking at this and go, yo, he had to give up $2 million. What did he do to have to get to this point? And then that has to come up. But either way it goes, That's the process he has to go with as far as trying to convince other people of this whole thing. But yo, it's these small things through these types of decisions and everything that come down. Think about how many times that a judge gives sentences to certain folks based off of whatever he believes about them for the same crimes for someone else that they give lesser sentences to. How much do we complain about that? This is criminal type of thing, sending people to jail based off of your belief systems by that person, their age, maybe gonna try them as an adult, maybe because of their different background and socioeconomic status. These decisions are always made. But here, over $2 million from Donald Trump, from the things that regular folks would see as absolute disgusting behavior, we have to then start having these nitpicking different things because of the $2 million. Yo, the backwards nature of this country and the way we go through these processes is always illustrated, but it's a matter of whether or not we're gonna care enough about it.
Yeah, I think of it as strength. Maybe sometimes it feels like a weakness. We on our side try to put ourselves in other people's positions and imagine, you know, what their life is like, why they think what they do, why they do what they do or whatever. And I just think, like, imagine if Bernie Sanders had been accused of all this stuff and then they find the trial goes through, it's done. And like they only found that he sexually abused a woman and owes millions of dollars. And I'm like, oh, thank God he didn't rape her. What are you talking about? Yeah. How is that the takeaway? Like, and then after it's found that this guy that I worship sexually abused someone, he does like a town hall and once again insults her appearance and implies that she wasn't attractive enough for him to have actually raped. Like, and I'm like, that guy needs to go back to the White House. I know that like there's a lot of tribalism and there's a lot of bubbles and everything. But it really does still feel like there should be some things that should be capable of piercing that. And the last 5-10 years or so has just been a series of tests that we as a people fail. And you just have to update like your accounting of what matters or what could potentially get through to people. And you have all these things that you think would be on that list, but you just have to one after the other cross them off. Yeah, it's a trip following American politics, I'll just say that. Anyway, good news for E. Jean Carroll. Of course, the quest for actual justice continues. With that said, we're gonna take our second break. When we come back, a figure from the Ukraine investigation pops back up, but apparently has switched sides, has gone babyface in the parlance of WWE. We'll have the details for that and more after this. There's a lot of cultural focus on people like transitioning into their villain era these days, but what about the hero era and the turn from villain to hero? We actually have an example of that in politics, maybe. Probably not. Stay tuned. Lev Parnas is back in the news, though. I can tell you that. You remember him from the Rudy Giuliani Ukraine blackmail thing? No, he's popped back up and he's apparently switched sides. He is now claiming that he has direct experience that proves that the claims being made against Joe Biden and Hunter Biden have nothing to them. We're going to give you a little bit of information on that. But if you weren't following this a couple years ago, Lev Parnas is a former associate of Rudy Giuliani who was central to Trump's scheme to find dirt on the Bidens in Ukraine. He just sent top House Republicans a letter earlier this week saying he was willing to testify that their probe into corruption allegations regarding President Joe Biden and his family has no merit. So he is willing to testify. Ooh, stay tuned to find out if they're going to let him. We're going to let you know at the end of this story. For now, though, here's what he has to say. Giuliani tasked me with traveling to Ukraine throughout March, April, and May of 2019 to interview different people who had promised to give us information and evidence, including records of bribes, bank records, incriminating tapes. Yet every time I went on these trips and conducted these interviews, I came up with nothing. It was a fishing expedition, and they had reason to believe there were fish, and yet no fish. He says throughout all of these months of work, the extensive campaigns and networking done by Trump allies and Giuliani associates, including the enormously thorough interviews and assignments that I undertook, there has never been any evidence that Hunter or Joe Biden committed any crimes related to Ukrainian politics. Never during any of my communications with Ukrainian officials or connections to Burisma did any of them confirm or provide concrete facts linking the Bidens to illegal activities. Now, so why then was it such a big story for a long time? Well, Lev Parnas says, in fact, they asked me multiple times why our team was so concerned with this idea. The truth is that everyone from Giuliani and the BLT team to Devin Nunes and his colleagues to the people at Fox News knew that these allegations against the Bidens were false. There has never been any actual factual evidence, only conspiracy theories spread by people who knew exactly what they were doing. Now, Lev Parnas is a guy that if you want to believe that he's just lying, I cannot tell you that there are not good historic reasons to believe that he might be willing to lie. He also, however, has had many, many conversations with all these people. And so if Rudy Giuliani along the way had been very clear that he was doing this to find dirt on the Bidens, but he didn't actually believe that it was true, and he believed that just talking about this, even without evidence, could get a lot of what they want out of it, which is clearly their strategy, he would have been there for those conversations. So anyway, JR, what do you make of this? I did not expect him to pop up again.
It's wild. And there's a thing you have to try and ask yourself. I think you were saying that at the back end. So if this isn't the case, you know, maybe people say don't believe him, he's a disgruntled ex-employee, whatever the normal mantra is so what is it that he experienced? And if you have to guess, maybe there's tons of evidence and Lev Parnas is now trying to flip the script and say that there was absolutely none. He went on constant fishing expeditions. He went through extensive interviews and talks and travel to find some evidence. If he's lying about the fact that there's now no evidence and everyone knew there was no evidence, where the F is the evidence? That's all. Or even just the some of the buildup to that evidence. I mean, we still know, as Trump is seeing now, it's not like he's been on trial and has been convicted of anything, but charges come up and they reveal some of the evidence. As people see that evidence, which many times Trump gave away before they even brought any charges, because he keeps talking on Truth Social about things that he did illegally. All that evidence is out there in front of many people. We don't have everything, but we have enough for people to go, something's off here. All we have in these situations is people accusing, saying this probably happened, and I have a source that I can't name yet. I have a source that just disappeared that constantly tell me something different. Show me something. Again, yeah, I've said it so many times. Joe Biden is not my uncle. If he did some illegal stuff and along with Hunter, show me. They just don't have it.
They seemingly don't have it. And they appear to not have it because it isn't there to be had. In any event, as we said in the intro, Lev Parnas sent this letter, but he is willing to do more. And if you believe that he's lying and you want a chance to question him, perhaps under oath, that's possible. He says, I am willing to testify under oath in Congress regarding any of these matters and answer any questions that you might have. Again, remember this was to top House Republicans, or provide you with any texts or correspondence in these situations I've described in this letter. So he could still be planning to lie, but he is willing to go under oath. That means there's actual legal consequences for lying. He's willing to provide evidence. This is a major bombshell. And so you will be shocked to find out that House Oversight Committee Chairman James Comer, asked about this, told HuffPost, I don't think that that's credible. I don't know that you have the best track record, James Comer, on figuring out what's credible and what's not. Your star witnesses are like on the run from the law. And you had no problem with Lev Parnas back when you thought he could help prove your conspiracies. Suddenly you're not interested. If there's any way, I don't know, before the Senate or whatever, they could have him come in and speak. I don't know what he'll say. I don't know if he's credible, but you cannot pretend to be super interested in the Burisma stuff and not be interested in what one of the chief investigators into it has to say. Anyway, with that said, we have one more topic to close out the hour. This one is a doozy. It's a real tragedy. So we're switching gears to something super serious here. I want to talk about an alleged act of horrendous, apparently racially motivated violence that is thus far receiving almost no attention, not just at the national level, but even at the state or local level. Very little information has yet come out about this. So this is John Roan Jr., a black man who was apparently killed by a white supremacist, an alleged white supremacist, Sean Tonkin, outside a Kansas City gas station on the 4th of July, just before 2:30 p.m. And what witnesses have revealed so far about what happened is shocking. What's more shocking is how little legally has resulted from this. So witness accounts and court records offer a bone-chilling narrative of the murder. This is coming from the KC Defender, what appears to be the only journalistic outfit that has talked about this story. The vicious act was a display of racial hatred as Tonkin made his intent clear to multiple eyewitnesses. Roan's sister recounts the harrowing words spoken by the murderer before he launched his attack, including the question, "Do you want to see a white man F up an N word?" So he was not hiding the racial component of this, and he was perfectly willing to do both the violence as well as talking about his motivations in front of multiple people. Now, when emergency responders arrived at the scene, they found Roan inside the gas station, unresponsive and suffering from multiple stab wounds to the chest, which proved fatal. Here is a photo of Sean Tonkin, the alleged assailant. Jackson County court documents reveal Tonkin was allegedly found with a folding knife emblazoned with an American flag on the handle. How patriotic. Test results showed blood traces were discovered on the blade. Now, all of this horrendous. And it would also seem, based on all that we have just heard about this, that the next steps legally would be very easy to predict. Well, perhaps they are, but only in that we know what America actually prioritizes and what it does not. So after the defender did an interview with Roan's family, prosecutors did bring charges against Tonkin, but not for murdering Roan. At present, the only charges are possession of a controlled substance and a peace disturbance. And look, we now reach a point in the story where I have to just say, I don't understand what is going on. Partially because no one else is reporting on this. We have very little information about, you know, potentially last minute developments in the story, what's been going on. But as of right now, it doesn't seem as if the fact that a man was killed and that multiple eyewitnesses were there for it, let alone the racial stuff, is being considered seriously at all. Like, even if you, let's say that you're predisposed to think, who cares if it was racially motivated? I don't think hate crimes are a thing. No one disputes that a man was killed and that it seems super clear who did it. And yet, we're now weeks, 2 weeks away from the murder and seemingly nothing is happening. I hope to be proven wrong. I hope that other outfits do some digging, talk to the police, figure out what's going on, perhaps pressure them to do something if nothing is in fact being done. But JR, it's just an absolute mess and I want to know what you think about it.
It's one of those situations. Look, people may say stop bringing up race. But every time you see a difference in the way that maybe our judicial system doesn't handle normal things, you pointed it out there. You don't have to talk about race if you don't want to, but a man was murdered by someone who went in there on a crazed knife attack. What do you want to do about that? What if it was an elderly white guy? Same thing should probably come down because someone was murdered. So the addition of maybe a race charge on it is based off of maybe trying to keep people from thinking they should be inspired by an act like this and do it more. But the murder charge is the base. Where is that part? And when we start analyzing which one of these is not like the others, we always see that it's the black guy who's then been murdered based off of this declaration the guy made beforehand. We can't pay attention to that. He said it. Everyone said he said it. The prosecutor says he said it.
Yeah. It's a reminder, by the way, this amongst all of the various components of this tragedy. The fact that the violence happened, the fact that there are people who are so motivated by racial hatreds to allegedly commit acts like this, the fact that there's injustice. But at least there are, it proves how important local journalism is. So hopefully we'll have updates for you. That is unfortunately all the time we have for the first hour, but come back for the aftermath.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.